We'll turn to page A6 for the Nation and World section. Our first article is titled, Israel Touts Alliance. Biden calls for united diplomatic response to attack by Iran. This article written by Tia Goldenberg of the Associated Press. Dateline Tel Aviv, Israel. Israeli leaders on Sunday credited an international military coalition with helping to thwart a direct Iranian attack involving hundreds of drones and missiles, calling the coordinated response a starting point for a strategic alliance of regional opposition to Tehran. But Israel's war cabinet met without making a decision on next steps, an official said, as a nervous world waited for signs of further escalation of the former shadow war. The military coalition led by the United States, Britain, and France, and appearing to include a number of Middle Eastern countries, gave Israel support at a time when it finds itself isolated over its war against Hamas in Gaza. The coalition also could serve as a model for regional relations when that war ends. This was the first time that such a coalition worked together against the threat of Iran and its proxies in the Middle East, said the Israeli military spokesman Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari. In Washington, President Joe Biden pledged to convene allies to develop a unified response. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that the U.S. would hold talks with allies. After an urgent meeting, the group of seven countries unanimously condemned Iran's attack and said they stood ready to take further measures. One unknown is which of Israel's neighbors participated in the shooting down of the vast majority of about 350 drones and missiles Iran launched. Israeli military officials and a key war cabinet member noted additional partners without naming them. When pressed, White House spokesman, National Security spokesman John Kirby would not name them either. But one appeared to be Jordan, which described its action as self-defense. There was an assessment that there was real danger of Iranian marches and missiles falling on Jordan, and the armed forces dealt with this danger. And if this danger came from Israel, Jordan would take the same action, Jordanian Foreign Minister Ayman el-Safadi said in an interview on Al-Malaka State Television. Biden spoke with King Jordan's Abdullah on Sunday. The U.S. has long tried to forge a region-wide alliance against Iran as a way of integrating Israel and boosting ties with the Arab world. The effort has included the 2020 Abraham Accords, which established diplomatic relations between Israel and four Arab countries, and having Israel in the U.S. military central command, which oversees operations in the Middle East and works closely with the armies of moderate Arab states. The U.S. has been working to establish full relations between Israel and regional heavyweight Saudi Arabia before the October 7th Hamas attack sparked Israel's war in Gaza. The war, which has claimed over 33,000 Palestinian lives, has frozen those efforts due to widespread outrage across the Arab world. That article from page A6 was titled Israeli Touts Alliance. Biden calls for united diplomatic response to attack by Iran by the Associated Press.
Next on page A6, thousands protest abortion rights. New government seeks to liberalize strict laws governing pregnancy. This is by Monica Shishlovska of the Associated Press, Dateline Warsaw, Poland. Thousands of Polish opponents of abortion rights marched Sunday in Warsaw to protest recent steps by the new government to liberalize the predominantly Catholic nation's strict laws and allow termination of pregnancy until the 12th week. Many participants in the downtown march were pushing prams with children, while others were carrying white and red national flags or posters representing a fetus in the womb. Poland's Catholic Church called for Sunday to be a day of prayer in defense of conceived life, and supported the march, organized by an anti-abortion movement. A federation of anti-abortion movements said in a statement, "In the face of promotion of abortion in recent months, the march will be a rare occasion to show our support for the protection of human life from conception to natural death." They were referring to an ongoing public debate surrounding the steps that the four-month-old government of Prime Minister Donald Tusk is taking to relax the strict law brought in by its conservative predecessor. Last week, Poland's parliament, which is dominated by the liberal and pro-European Union ruling coalition, voted to approve further detailed work on four proposals to lift the near ban on abortions. The procedure, which could take weeks or even months, is expected to be eventually rejected by conservative President Andrzej Duda, whose term runs for another year. Last month, Duda vetoed a draft law that would have made the morning-after pill available over-the-counter from the age of 15. A nation of some 38 million, Poland is seeking ways to boost the birth rate, which is currently at some 1.2 per woman, among the lowest in the European Union. Poland's society is aging and shrinking, facts that the previous right-wing government used among its arguments for toughening the abortion law. Currently, abortions are allowed only in cases of rape or incest, or if the woman's life or health is at risk. According to the Health Ministry, 161 abortions were performed in Polish hospitals in 2022. However, abortion advocates estimate that some 120,000 women in Poland have abortions each year, mostly by secretly obtaining pills from abroad. Women attempting to abort themselves are not penalized, but anyone assisting them can face up to 3 years in prison. Reproductive rights advocates say the result is that doctors turn women away, even in permitted cases, for fear of legal consequences for themselves. One of the four proposals being processed in Parliament would decriminalize assisting a woman to have an abortion. Another one, put forward by a party whose leaders are openly Catholic, would keep a ban in most cases, but would allow abortions in cases of fetal defects, a right that was eliminated by a 2020 court ruling. The two others aim to permit abortion through the 12th week. And that was an Associated Press article on page A6, Thousands Protest Abortion Rights.
Also from page A6, we have an article titled House Speaker to Push for National Security Package. It's written by Stephen Groves of the Associated Press. Dateline Washington. House Speaker Mike Johnson said Sunday that he will try to advance wartime aid for Israel this week as he attempts the difficult task of winning House approval for a national security package that includes funding for Ukraine and allies in Asia. Johnson, a Republican from Louisiana, is already under immense political pressure from his fellow GOP lawmakers as he tries to stretch between the Republican Party's divided support for helping Kyiv defend itself from Moscow's invasion. The Republican leader has set for 2 months on a $95 billion supplemental package that would send support to the U.S. allies, as well as provide humanitarian aid for civilians in Ukraine and Gaza, and funding to replenish U.S. weapons provided to Taiwan. The unprecedented attack by Iran on Israel early Sunday further ratcheted up the pressure on Johnson, but also gave him an opportunity to underscore the urgency of approving the funding. Johnson told Fox News Channel's Sunday Morning Futures that he and Republicans understand the necessity of standing with Israel, and he would try this week to advance the aid. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer at a news conference also said that President Biden held a phone call Sunday with the top Republican and Democrats in the House and Senate, including Johnson. The New York Democrats said that there was consensus among all the leaders that we had to help Israel and help Ukraine, and now hopefully we can work that out and get this done next week. And that article from page A6 was titled House Speaker to Push for National Security Package by the Associated Press.
And on page A4 we have this piece, gathered from staff reports, Virginia politicians respond to Iran striking Israel. Prominent Virginia politicians expressed solidarity with Israel following reports of drone strikes by Iran. Some lawmakers issued statements on Saturday night, others on Sunday. Yesterday, the U.S. stood with our ally Israel to help it defend against Iranian attacks. We should continue to do so, just as we have played a key role in helping Ukraine defend itself against Russia's illegal invasion. As part of those efforts, the House should finally act to pass the Senate-passed security bill to bolster the defenses of Israel and Ukraine. We must also continue to work with all nations to protect innocent civilians and de-escalate violence throughout the region by continuing to press for a deal between Israel and Hamas to release hostages and establish a significant ceasefire in Gaza. The safety of Americans and our service members will always remain my top priority. I am grateful for the U.S. service members, including many from Virginia, who are working with our allies in the region, and I will do all I can to resist any effort to push the United States into another unnecessary war in the Middle East. And that was a statement by Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia, and a member of the Senate Foreign Relations and Armed Services Committees. Senator Mark Warner also had a statement. He is the chairman of the Select Committee on Intelligence. He wrote, "Tonight's response to Iran's reckless attacks demonstrates the continued commitment by the U.S. to Israel's security. We stand with the Israeli people and support Israel's right to defend itself while seeking to avoid further escalation in an already volatile region." Governor Glenn Youngkin wrote, "During this time of great peril, our prayers are with Israel and all our Jewish community. We must stand strong with our allies and strong against Iran." Representative Abigail Spanberger, a Democrat of the 7th, wrote, "Iran attacked Israel, launching missiles, rockets, and drones. Speaker Johnson must bring the U.S. Senate-passed bipartisan national security supplemental for an immediate vote in the U.S. House. As instability increases throughout the world, we must send this bill to the president's desk to support our allies and civilians." Former Delegate Eileen Filler Korn, a Democrat of Fairfax, who was the first Jewish person to serve as Speaker of the Virginia House of Delegates, released this statement, "Iran's attack on Israel underscores the importance of urgent congressional action. My cousin, who waited anxiously in a bomb shelter in Israel yesterday, shared with me that they just lived through a miracle. The House must pass the bipartisan national security bill, which already passed the Senate, to provide Israel and our allies with the capabilities they need to defend democracy. Our commitment to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan must remain ironclad and unwavering. Bring the Senate bill to a vote tomorrow and pass it without delay." Delegate Dan Helmer, a Democrat of Fairfax, wrote, "Grateful for our service members on the front lines tonight who interdicted the Iranian threats and protected our ally in Israel. Tonight's attack by Iran reinforces the need for American leadership and for us to stand with our allies. The House must approve the bill to send aid to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan immediately." And finally, Representative Jen Kiggins, a Republican of the 2nd, wrote, "Israel is and always will be our strongest ally in the Middle East. Please join me in praying for the Israeli people." And that was an article gathered from staff reports on page A4, "Virginia Politicians Respond to Iran Striking Israel."
Turning to the top of page A2, we have an article titled "Montgomery County Wildfire on 250 Acres, 90% Contained." It's written by Emma Coleman of the Roanoke Times. The wildfire that prompted an evacuation advisory on Saturday evening is expected to be 100% contained a day later, state forestry officials announced. Montgomery County residents were encouraged to evacuate from the Fishers View Road area near Shawsville late Saturday due to a wildfire that grew to 250 acres. The county government reported the fire in a social media post at about 5:45 p.m. Saturday and encouraged citizens in the 4300 block of Fishers View Road to leave the area. As of 5 p.m., approximately 80 acres of the vicinity have been impacted by the wildfire, the county said on its website. By 7 p.m., the fire had begun moving away from residences, and no more evacuations were anticipated, an update on the county website relayed. Local first responders were on the scene, plus Virginia Department of Forestry personnel. Shortly before 9 p.m., the county reported that crews were still on the scene and encouraged residents to avoid Fishers View Road area. Fire and EMS agencies from Elliston, Christiansburg, Blacksburg, Reiner, Floyd, and Pulaski had responded to the incident. At about 9:40 a.m. Sunday, the county said that the fire was expected to be 100% contained by the end of the day. Crews were still working to contain the blaze, which the Department of Forestry reported had grown to 250 acres. It is at 90% containment as of Sunday morning, the county's website reads. No homes or structures have been lost. Several large brush fires have been reported in the area over the past month, including one in Roanoke County that reached about 75 acres on 12 o'clock Knob. While the Forestry Department has reported a low fire danger rating in the Salem region on Sunday, a post 4 p.m. burn ban is in effect in Virginia between February 15th and April 30th, as it is every year. And that article from page A2 was titled Montgomery County Wildfire on 250 Acres, 90% Contained by the Roanoke Times.
And on page A3, new exhibit explores Richmond in the 1890s. This is by Emily Weiner of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. The Valentine Museum has a new exhibit about Richmond as it was about 130 years ago. Turning Points, Richmond in the 1890s, pays tribute to a decade of change in the city. The exhibit opened as a way to celebrate the museum's 126th anniversary, in addition to highlighting a critical decade, said Christina Vida, curator of general collections. By really looking at the 1890s and comparing it to today, we see just how much of Richmond today was really influenced by what had happened in the 1890s, Vida said. Many institutions and organizations important to Richmond's history began in the 1890s. These institutions include the Daughters of the American Revolution, the National Society of the Colonial Dames, and the Confederate Memorial Literary Society. There were also several educational institutions established in the 1890s, such as Virginia Union University, the Bell Bryan Day Nursery, now Virginia Commonwealth University's Childhood Development Center, and St. Catherine's School. Also during the 1890s, many of the monuments, most of which have been removed from Monument Avenue, were erected. The ribbon from the unveiling of the Soldiers and Sailors Monument is on display at the museum, Vida said. The 1890s also welcomed developments in the news media in Richmond. Joseph Bryan bought the Times that began competing with the Richmond Planet, which was edited by John Mitchell Jr. at the time. The two papers were known for their different styles and disagreements in political coverage, Vida said. They're using these newspapers to really debate the social, cultural, and political aspects of the 1890s, Vida said. So they're great records to go back to and kind of compare and contrast. Artifacts related to these newspapers can be found at the exhibit. Another relic of note, according to Vida, is a sewer plate from when the water meter was implemented in 1897. With the development of suburbs came an expansion of city water lines during the 1890s, Vita said, and residents had access to however much water they wanted. But this created a problem with overusage, and residents of higher floor apartments did not have enough water available. The city's implementation of a water meter, which charged residents for their water usage, immediately led to a decrease in usage and allowed everyone to have the same access to water, Vita said. It sounds super mundane, but it actually was really important, Vita said about the introduction of the water meter. The new exhibit also displays the cornerstone box that had been buried under the Jefferson Davis Monument and was not found until the monument came down in 2022, Vita said. The box was originally unearthed in 1907 from Monroe Park to build a temple for Jefferson Davis, but the original planners did not receive enough funds for it. A marble chip from that box was the only relic found still intact after the box had suffered water damage, Vita said. The chip is from the steps of Davis's house, also known as the White House of the Confederacy. The exhibit is a nice blend of history, social, cultural, business, and then political developments that happened in the 1890s, Vita said. So many of those organizations are still active today. Other key objects to check out, Vita said, include a guest register from Edward Valentine's sculpture studio, a whites-only door, and a baseball hat from the University of Richmond. The exhibit is available until February 2, 2025. And that article from Emily Weiner of the Richmond Times-Dispatch was on page A3. New exhibit explores Richmond in the 1890s.
Our next article comes from page A10. It's titled Endangered Whale Found Entangled. This piece written by Patrick Whittle of the Associated Press. Dateline Portland, Maine. A North Atlantic right whale was spotted entangled in rope off New England, worsening an already devastating year for the vanishing animals, federal authorities said. Right whales number less than 360 and are vulnerable to entanglement in fishing gear and collisions with ships. The entangled whale was seen Tuesday about 50 miles south of Rhode Island's Block Island, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said. The whale had rope coming out of both sides of its mouth and had been far from shore, making it difficult for rescuers to help, NOAA said in a statement. Given the long distance from shore, experts were unable to safely travel to the last known location of the whale during daylight to attempt a rescue, the statement said. NOAA Fisheries and our partners will monitor this whale and attempt to respond to the entanglement, if possible, as weather and safety conditions allow. Several right whales died this year off Georgia and Massachusetts, and environmental groups fear the species could be headed for extinction. The animal's population fell about 25% from 2010 to 2020. Every effort will be made to free the entangled animals, said Scott Landry, a director of the Marine and Animal Entanglement Response Program at the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown, Massachusetts. The public said the public can become very impatient with these entanglement cases, Landry said. These things can play out very slowly, and we simply ask the patience of the public when they're trying to understand these difficult events. A whale found dead off Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts in January showed evidence of injury from an entanglement in fishing gear. Environmental groups called for stricter rules to protect the whales from entanglement in gear. This is another example that entanglements are happening in U.S. waters, said Gib Brogan, campaign director with environmental group Oceana. We need stronger protection from the entanglements in the U.S. waters. However, a federal budget package passed in late 2022 included a six-year pause on new federal regulations for whales. The whales were once numerous off the East Coast, but were decimated during the commercial whaling era that have been slow to recover. They've been federally protected for decades. They migrate every year from calving grounds off Florida and Georgia to feeding grounds off New England and Canada. The journey has become perilous in recent years because their food sources appear to be moving as water's warm. That change causes the whales to stray from protected areas of ocean and become vulnerable to entanglements and collisions, scientists say. In that article from page A10 was titled Endangered Whale Found Entangled by Patrick Whittle of the Associated Press.
And here are the AP news briefs on page A6. Russian attacks kill several civilians. Dateline Kyiv, Ukraine. More civilians died across Ukraine Sunday as analysts warned that delays in U.S. military assistance would see Kyiv struggle to fight off Russian offensives. One man was killed after a Russian drone hit the truck he was driving Sunday in the Sumy region, the local prosecutor's office said. Elsewhere, a 67-year-old woman was killed after shelling hit an apartment block in the Donetsk region, said Governor Vadim Filyashkin. Officials in the Kharkiv region also said Sunday that they had retrieved the bodies of a 61-year-old woman and a 68-year-old man killed in a Russian strike the previous day. Meanwhile, shelling in the Russian-occupied Kherson region killed two civilians Sunday, said Moscow-installed leader Vladimir Saldo. In Chicago, 11 people standing outside a family gathering Saturday night were shot, including a young girl who was killed in what Chicago police believe was gang-related violence on the city's south side. Four victims were children, police said Sunday. An 8-year-old girl was fatally shot, while a 1-year-old boy and an 8-year-old boy were each shot multiple times and listed in critical condition. A 9-year-old boy was also injured with a graze wound to his finger and hospitalized. The department's Sunday statement updated the number of shooting victims to 11 from 8 and gave new ages for the victims compared with a news conference late Saturday. No one was in custody Sunday. Presidential debates. 12 news organizations on Sunday urged presumptive presidential nominees Joe Biden and Donald Trump to agree to debates, saying they were a rich tradition that has been part of every general election campaign since 1976. In Oklahoma, 4 people were arrested and charged with murder and kidnapping over the weekend in connection with the disappearances of 2 Kansas women who were driving through Oklahoma. Veronica Butler, age 27, and Jillian Kelly, age 39. Their vehicle was found abandoned on a rural highway in Oklahoma. Body parts. The wife of a former Harvard Medical School morgue manager, Denise Lodge, age 64, of Goffstown, New Hampshire, pleaded guilty Friday to a federal charge after investigators said she shipped stolen human body parts to buyers. Next, a pilot flying solo and using a backpack-style paramotor device died Sunday when the small aircraft crashed in the city of Maricopa, Arizona, authorities said. A city spokesman said the crash occurred around 7 a.m. In Afghanistan, heavy flooding from seasonal rains killed at least 33 people and injured 27 others in 3 days, a Taliban spokesman said Sunday. Abdullah Janan Saik, the Taliban's spokesman for the State Ministry for Natural Disaster Management, said more than 600 houses were either partially or completely destroyed. And in Indonesia, torrential rains triggered landslides on Indonesia's Sulawesi Island, killing at least 14 people and leaving 3 others missing, officials said Sunday. Mud fell from surrounding hills onto four houses just before midnight Saturday, said local police chief Gunardi Mundu. And those are the Associated Press news briefs found on page A6. And now we'll take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with today's birthdays, followed by items on the opinions page and more news. Stay with us, please.